Well, good morning, friends. Good to see you here today. So, I invite you to just settle in and relax. Just take a deep but gentle breath. And settle into the sanctuary of your heart. Where you gently notice that each breath brings you closer and closer to the realization of your essential wholeness. With its own energy, its own vibration that is soft and gentle and open and curious. And safe. The presence of divine love meets you right here, right where you are in this breath. In this moment, which is timeless, extending out into infinity. In this moment, we belong. In this moment, we are at home. And from this presence, this stillness, we can just stop and see, just as if we're walking along on a beautiful tree-lined path, and you stop to hear a bird song in the trees. Hear it singing. In the same way, you can just stop and notice the singing mind, the chirping mind, and smile at it. Notice it. Watch it. Becoming aware that you can let that bird sing as you move even deeper and deeper into the experience of stillness. And breathe. This moment holds it all. This moment holds the stillness and the thoughts and the feelings. While also calling forth your awareness as a deeply centered loving presence. Meeting the moments of your life. With awakening, ascending grace. Thank you, God. Thank you, God, for your awakening presence within us. From which we can draw strength. And rest. And return to again and again.
Thank you. to be. We are called to be the kindness, set the brokenhearted free. We are called to be forgiveness, where pain has run too deep. We are called to be compassion, be the wind beneath each wing. We are called to make communion, only then we can succeed. We are called to be a prayer, living out the truth you seek. We are called to be
beautiful and so fitting for today's lesson. It's good to be with you today. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to come again. I appreciate that so much in your beloved community. Oh, man. What a journey it's been, yes? Oh, my. Whew. So much upset. Then things seem to settle down a little bit. And then something else happens. All the peaks and the valleys. We think we've seen it all. And then something else happens. Something else shows up. Wow. And it seems like it's been going on for a long time. Yeah. 13.7 billion years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Swirling around to stardust. And then a few billion years later, a series of transformation and life found a way to move through us. Walking us out of the savannas of Africa and crossing the land bridges to Alaska and the Americas, crossing those perilous seas to New Zealand and Australia. And we think that 2016 was a challenging year. That these are challenging times. Oh, challenges. Oh, yeah. We've seen them. We've seen them. Floods and droughts, all kinds of natural disasters. And yet, this epic, incredible mystery has brought us here, right here, today, to this now moment, to what the Buddhists call our precious human birth. Isn't that beautiful? Our precious human birth. And they point out how unlikely it is at all for us to have a human birth. Rare, rare and precious, so that a human birth is to be greatly prized. Wow, breathe into that for a moment. So we got in our cars this morning. We drove here. We walked through the door and greeted each other. Well, what have you been up to? Oh, not much, really. Not much. Really? Just playing your part in this great story, this great mystery? That's all. Just walk through the doors, really? Just walk through the doors? We've been carried along. Carried on a current of strength and power, of creation itself. I know it might appear that I just opened the door of my 98 Honda Civic, walked across the street, opened the door. Yes. But it's a larger story, friends. We've emerged. We emerge from this process of deep transformation and challenge and transition to take that step and the next step that leads us here today to show up. So some of the information that I want to share with us in the next few weeks that we are together is inspired by the Book of Joy. It's a conversation between His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu and Douglas Abrams. You know, now it may be strange to be talking about joy and happiness right now, when so many of us are feeling bereft and concerned and confused. But I'm not talking about this limited idea of joy or happiness, that limited kind of experience of pleasure. I think we talked about that a little bit last time I was here. I'm not talking about pleasure. There's nothing wrong with pleasure. I love pleasure. I'm crazy about it. But I'm talking about the difference between the kind of pleasure that we experience through our material acquisitions or our experiences, like watching sports on TV. You know how that kind of pleasure can come and go pretty quickly? I'm not talking about that. No, I'm talking about the uplifting, sustaining power and grace of our connection to our essential being, unencumbered by any kind of dogma or theology, but by eight qualities that we're going to be exploring together. There's been so much talk about grief over the past couple months. I find that very interesting, actually. I find it a real shift in perspective, because it wasn't that long ago in our society where we really didn't talk about grief openly. We didn't acknowledge it at all. It was a private affair. So I think that this public conversation that we're having about grieving some of our losses or dreams or ideals or values or respect, I think this is healthy. We're talking about it. And the thing with grief is it really has the potential to slow us down and help us connect with each other in an authentic way. All that other stuff just slides right off. And we're talking the truth when we're speaking from that place of grief. It helps us see from a different perspective what is really important, that we are all in this one life together, that our beloved teacher and mentor, Martin Luther King Jr., said, we all came on different vessels, but now We're all on the same ship. You know, it's a matter of perspective. With our grief and our losses, and this helps challenge us and clarify our priorities. And ironically, these are life-giving lessons learned in the most devastating of ways. And when we get that, we want to move on that window of opportunity, because we very, very quickly we can become complacent and fall back into our own old patterns. You know, I am just so happy to have an expanded perspective about happiness. To learn that rather than, you know, we've had such an awkward way of talking about happiness in our culture as this kind of variable, vague sort of thing. Well, I just want to be happy, or we want to be happy, and what is that? But they're telling us this very important insight, at least for me, that happiness is a cluster of skills. Yeah, a cluster of skills. Most of us have some capacity with these skills already. We're living already from these skills. It's a cluster of 8 skills that they call pillars, because they hold us up and they're the sustaining power and strength that get us through difficult times. They steady our minds and our hearts. They're reliable strengths. And these are: 1, perspective. Perspective as a way to experience and to live happiness, a happy life. Humility and humor. Acceptance. Not the kind of acceptance that is resignation, but the kind of acceptance that allows us to step out of denial and see what we're dealing with here so we can take some action. That kind of acceptance. Forgiveness. Gratitude. Compassion. Generosity. These are the 8 pillars, and they are resources that we can rely on to withstand the challenges that we face, and they are the way that we really claim happiness in our lives. We're not going to be able to cover all these in the little series that I have together, but we can start the conversation today. Now, foundational to all the rest is perspective. We've already started talking about that a little bit this morning with this larger cosmic story. And when we're unable to grasp or to hold on to that larger story, then we react with more fear, sometimes more anger than is necessary. Now, I'm not talking rose-colored glasses here at all, but a reminder, just a reminder, that we need to think about this as just a part of the whole story. There's another story I want to tell you. It's another perspective. It's a brilliant story from the Gospel of John. I first heard this story when I was a young girl. I had no idea what it meant, but it changed me. That's the way with a good spiritual story. Sometimes you have no idea what it means, but something shifts and you're changed and you're different from that experience. And then over the years of your life, it unfolds and opens a little bit more. So it continues to evolve in me, and it's taken me with it. And I apologize to some of my friends and former students, because you have heard this story so many times. God bless you for your patience. So many times. I know, you could tell the story yourself. You want to stand up and tell the story? Okay. They know. But what I'm asking us to look at here is that every time we hear this story, we get new insights, and the older insights go deeper. And always remember that we're not looking at the literal meaning of these stories at all. That is not a conversation we are the least bit interested in here, at least I'm not. We are looking for the more than literal stories, the truth in the story, not the truth of the story. All right, here we go. It takes place at a terrible time. Terrible time. It's after the crucifixion. And Simon, whose nickname was Peter, he'd been a close follower of Jesus. And like many men in the story, he went into hiding. He ran away. Now, Peter, Petros in Greek, means the rock. And it has been said that he was called the rock because he was to be the foundation of the Roman church. But Joseph Campbell used to say that he thought Peter was nicknamed, or that Simon was nicknamed Peter the Rock because he was so dense and stuck in his ways. And there's lots of stories in the New Testament about Peter when he just takes on some of those qualities. I don't know what to say. Yeah. So Peter fled back to his home, his cottage by the sea with his family. And I can imagine what he was like when he burst through that door. Oh my, what a sight. Deeply shaken, breathless, pale, his eyes red with tears. He hunkers down in a dark corner and pulls his cloak up about him. Sobbing, weeping, inconsolable, grief-stricken, bless you. Deeply ashamed, too, because just hours before he had denied even knowing Jesus. I don't know him. I never knew him. No, it's not my problem. I don't know. Oh, spiraling down into the dark night of the soul. And this darkness goes on for, I don't know, a few days, 3 or 4 days, maybe more. And maybe his wife said something to him like, you know, honey, maybe you need to go fishing. Take that boat out. You might feel better. Good, clean, fresh air. So Peter waits until nightfall, under the protection of darkness when no one could see him and stop him and ask him where he'd been, what was going on. He left his home and he walked down to where his boat was tied up at the water's edge. And there he found his brother Andrew sleeping on the deck and some other folks. They were all in a similar kind of situation, a feeling, wow, what is this? What had just happened? Well, they'd been through this routine so many times, they could do it wordlessly. They knew how to get that little boat prepared to take it out. And so they start moving that little boat out into the water, and the shipboards creak as they move about, creating this kind of eerie little echo across the water. You know how that sounds? You ever heard that kind of thing, been on the water, and heard that eerie echo of sound? They pulled up anchor and drifted off into waters just deep enough to put down their nets. The ship's hull groaned in the current and the sounds of the water lapping up against the sides of the boat. And from the village you might hear a donkey braying, a dog barking. So still otherwise, the stars so bright and distant, peaceful, oh, so peaceful, except for Peter. He plays the scenes over and over again in his mind, recalling the fear and the humiliation, the shame. And all night long, they fished. the waters of Galilee. But the story goes, all night long they caught what? Nothing. All night long they caught nothing. Well, then dawn breaks. And as you know, when dawn breaks in a story, spiritual or otherwise, it means a shift is about to happen, an illumination is about to happen. Something is going to happen. And so in the filtered light of dawn, a scatter of people begin to show up on shore. They're starting their morning cook fires. They're getting ready to prepare their nets and take their boats out. It's nothing unusual about that. And a voice calls out to the men from shore and says, "Have you caught anything yet?" Well, Peter thought nothing of it. I mean, fishermen do this thing all the time, wanting to know how it is out there. Oh, Peter had to reach deep, 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 deep. That heaviness. You know, that heaviness of grief when it's so hard to even make a word or response. You know what that's like. He reached deeply for his voice and called back, "No, not a thing." He knew if he didn't answer, they'd just keep asking him over and over. But the figure on shore didn't move. Instead, it called out simply and clearly, "Peter, cast your nets on the other side." Well, wow, that's an interesting command. But that's just what they did. They pulled up the nets. Imagine the weight of that, those nets, how heavy they would have been. They pulled up the nets and they put them on the other side of the boat. And no sooner do they put them on the other side of the boat than the nets are teeming with fish. Oh, fish everywhere, shimmering and glimmering in that beautiful morning light. Pink and purple and blue, and the men are going, "Whoa, what is this? What is this? Imagine this movement from this deep grief to this sense of curiosity bubbling up within them, this exclamations of joy and laughter. Whoa, what is this?" Peter looked out on shore and he had that profound moment of recognition that happens when we arrive at a moment of insight and change. As morning came and light illuminated the darkness, Peter realized that all that he had been grieving as lost was not lost, was not missing. Oh yeah, it was going to be different. It's different now. Not the same, but it wasn't lost to him. And he jumped into the water, swimming to shore in this joyous reunion I cannot even imagine. So what happens here? What happened? What was the guidance that Peter had been instructed to follow? Peter hadn't been told to take that boat way. Well, yeah, just take the boat out further on the other side, you know, go around the corner there, that little outreach. He hadn't been told to get another kind of technology. You know, you need a bigger boat, Peter, better nets. No. He'd been told to make a shift of perspective from what was missing to what was already there that he couldn't see. Just a small shift from one side of the boat to the other. He had a breakthrough, all right. A breakthrough of consciousness, allowing him to move beyond the old ways of perceiving that there is no separation, not in the worst of times, even in death, from the face of God, from the presence of the sacred. And when we are in a state of grief and worry, in times of challenge and crisis, we tend to forget this connection real quick. That's the nature of grief and worry. That's just the nature of it. Our attention is captured by what is missing. But the message that is essential to remember, that all transformation starts when we shift our point of view and awaken from this trance of separation from our habitual fears and ask, what is already here for me that I do not see? It's the call of awakening, the call of awareness emerging from our confusion and darkness, as the Unity poet James Dillard Freeman said, I am here. You may not see me, but I am here. Friends who have heard this story so many times, there's a part of the story that you may not have heard. It's a part of the story that I don't generally tell. Been saving it for you. Ooh, it's a good part. Peter swims to shore and he's reunited with Jesus. You can't imagine the joy of such a reunion as that. When what you thought was missing is somehow still there, the essence of it is still there. And Jesus, just like a good Jewish mother, has fixed breakfast. A little campfire, fixing some breakfast. And they sit down and they have this visit together. And then Jesus turns to Peter and asks, Simon, do you love me? Whoa. Wow. I invite you to lean in to this conversation. Imagine yourself being asked by the sacred, however you experience that, God, creation, goddess, Gaia, do you love me? And Simon says, well, you know I love you. And then Jesus said, feed my sheep. Oh boy, excuse me. Now, if that wasn't enough, Jesus turns to him and asks him again, Simon, do you love me? Yeah. Do you really love me? You know, we come to this point in our great challenge and despair to find that even in the midst of the unthinkable and the unimaginable, that the presence of God is still with us. And then what does this love do to us? Oh, it asks, do you really love me? And again, Peter responded, yes. You know I love you. And Jesus said, take care of my sheep. All right, just a little aside here, a little sidebar for any of you who might take these stories literally still. Does anyone really believe that Jesus left a legacy, a herd of livestock to take care of? These stories are spiritual metaphors. They're for our teaching and our learning. All right, then. One more time. Jesus asks, Simon, do you love me? Really? Now, of course, Jesus knows that Simon loves him, but the point is that the nature of love is that it flows in us and through us, and if this is really love, not just some kind of recreational spirituality, and it demands something of us to get out of ourself, to move out of our loss and run towards the other and serve. Of course you know I love you. Then feed my sheep. Walk your talk. Now sheep are among the most vulnerable of creatures. They can't run very fast. They don't have any natural defenses to speak of. They're not aggressive. And we're told that if we really love the sacred, if we really care in an authentic, real way, our work is to care for those that are most vulnerable and in need. And that is what love demands of us. Read the fifth principle. It is not enough to know all that good stuff. It's wonderful to know it, but we have to go out and live it. And when we're grieving, and we are grieving, and we think all is lost, we need to hold on to two very important perspectives simultaneously, at the same time. One is that we're more than this human experience. It's a mystery. We're made of stardust, and we're part of the infinite divine. Nothing is lost. Everything is constantly evolving and transforming into something else. And the second perspective needs to be very specific at times and focused on taking care of service to others, to claim the preciousness of this one precious life and our contribution, and to answer that call to love. And we as spiritual people, or whatever you call yourself, have to have this ability to move between the perspective of the little and the large, of what is in the spotlight of our attention and what is in the floodlight of our attention. In our grief, when it feels like all is lost, even if we can't see anything except the emptiness and what is missing, then something happens and we realize that love is still here. Our experience of it more sacred than ever, that the face of God is with us even now. And that the way that we stay connected to that service, that love, is through service. Peter's got the message. Look at this differently and see that love is still here. Stop spending so much time thinking about yourself. That would be okay, would it? Your failures and your losses. Because it's only going to cause you more pain. Because when we care for others, the irony is we're transformed. Our cares are transformed. Ask the question, what is here for me to do that I do not see? And cultivate this expanded and very particular perspective. We're becoming more skillful in developing these qualities that create happiness. Happiness and perspective is one of those keys and elements that keeps us grounded in the happiness and joy that is our essential being. In the Book of Joy, the authors tell us that when we hear bad news, oh, we think that's all there is. That's really when we need to engage in this twofold sense of perspective, to know that we are more than this seeming separation and madness. And also, our attention must be on what we can do right here and right now. And the reason that bad things are news is because they're exceptional. That right now, today, in this moment, love is still here. And there are millions and millions of children across the planet who are loved by their parents every day, and schools where those children are being cared for, and hospitals where people are getting the care they need. We need to remember that as well while we address the places where that isn't happening. In the darkness of loss and confusion, we find that love spins gold from our grief. And what does that look like? It means getting involved in issues or whatever that you're called to do, and there are many, every day. See, just every day, see how many good deeds you can do. If that's praying for someone else, or visiting someone else, or making a phone call, or picking up litter. Not huge, but drop by drop, the bucket of care is filled. And hold these two perspectives in your mind as best you can, and in your heart always, that you're part. You are part of this great cosmic story. And also so fortunate to have a precious human birth. And imagine what it might mean if we took up that challenge to love what is sacred to us, and to serve love. Serve love to the world.